Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday, the 19th of November. A delight to have you all with us. It's Monday, and it's Monday, but it's a short week for a lot of people because we have Thanksgiving, we have the Friday holiday, and which is what, just shopping day.
Oh, but darn it, we can't work. Think of the work we're not going to get done, Joe.
I know. Think of all the news stories we won't get to chat about. But so we have a wonderful panel today, and we're going to move on and talk to everybody, and it's very, very exciting. Albany County District Attorney David Soares is here. He was here on Friday. I was out, and so I missed you. I called you and said, will you please come in because we won't do a show this Friday, and you were nice enough to come in, so I thank you very much.
I missed you too, so that's the reason I'm here. You
know? I appreciate that. Very, very nice. Judy Patrick, you were fresh from the Greenwich Lighted Tractor Parade 2018 edition.
It was wonderful.
Wasn't it great?
Oh,
75
man.
Tractors making their way through the village of Greenwich, and yours was one of them.
It was, in fact. And it's darn cold taping lights to a tractor in the middle of November in a cold barn.
Wait. You were driving?
No, I actually decorated. I helped decorate. The Greenwich Cross Country Team was state champions this year, and my husband's the coach, so he decorated his 1959 Massey Ferguson.
Yep.
And the converted manure spreader we use as a wagon. It hasn't had
that
manure
was just
in it.
That was converted manure spreader.
Right. And, yeah. And we do the same thing here, don't we?
Yes, that's right. Maybe without the conversion.
But it's a wonderful parade. Usually I go to the Schenectady Christmas parade or holiday parade, as we call it.
Don't have to do that anymore.
No, don't do that anymore. And so it's the first year I've seen the tractor parade. And it is astounding that people are 6-7 deep.
Like 20,000 people in the village, you don't even know what to make of it, because it's a little tiny village and we're just not used to having that many people there. But when you talk to people, they've come from all over. They've come
with their tractors, Joe?
Well, no, they're coming to see it. So they've come from Vermont and Hudson Valley, and oh my God, I met so many people. It's really an amazing event. So, but it was good to see you in that, and a lot of fun, good community
spirit. Were you driving or riding on the tractor?
No, I just decorated and then I stood off to the side because I'm not.
It was
a runner.
All about the kids.
It was about the kids, man. And then the other thing it does is reinforces what our agricultural community, Washington County, still is.
Yes, out of curiosity, I just have to know what it's like to decorate a converted manure spreader. I mean, you got that on your resume. How many people have that on the resume?
You know what? The tape doesn't stick well to it.
Ah. Yeah, something gets in the way.
I know. Sometimes you need to find the shinola.
We're off to a great start here this morning.
And Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Well, I'm not well, thank you. I'm really trying to figure out how to do the 20-pound fresh turkey, which we've ordered over to the Guidos. And we are, that's not a disrespectful term, by the way. Guidos is our major market.
Did you get it fresh or frozen?
Oh, fresh.
Okay. So what's the dilemma?
Well, do you brine it? Do you salt it? Do you use kosher salt or another kind of salt? And, you know, I've been looking into all of this kind of thing, and you know, it's not easy. And
David, any suggestions?
Well, you know, I don't think brining could ever hurt. Yeah, that's
well, you're in the minority.
A big fan of the kosher salt too. Yeah.
You know, I'm one who a couple of years I've left the gizzard bag inside, and it wasn't until serving time that I realized, oops, look at this big plastic bag in the middle of the turkey. So I'm not
comes
a great
out.
Cook.
And nobody
comes
does.
Out.
Nobody
put
does.
It in a pan. Put it in the oven. Wait a few hours.
My twin brother Lewis lived for 4 years on nothing but chicken and turkey gizzards. That was his thing, and it's like 10 cents a pound.
The Chartoks and their diet.
Your twin
really
identical brother had a weird diet? I'm shocked.
indeed.
So my dilemma is, see what I'm drinking now, Alan? See?
Oh, yeah. So without caffeine in it.
Right. And because
it's like ginger ale.
So I had a,
as the kids would say, like ginger ale.
I had a kidney stone, and I had to pass that over the weekend. And that hurt like hell. But then, you know, the problem is they tell you not to drink the diet soda anymore, which is true.
And you have it in your other hand.
Well, the problem is that you can't also go cold turkey off the soda, or you get like massive migraine headaches,
exactly,
and then you pass over and die. So you just need like
really.
Yeah, well, no, I'm exaggerating the second
part. No, I don't mean I do mean about withdrawal.
Yeah, I would balance the pains. I mean, I would think that migraine has to be less painful than passing a stone.
That is true.
A good poll question.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, all is good. And I got cleared for the tractor parade, which was the best part of it.
So. I've learned more today in the last 5 weeks than I'm going to the entire week.
Well, no, we have real topics to discuss, and I promise that we'll get to them right now. We welcome
other turkeys.
That's right. We get to other topics, and we welcome your notes, of course. It's panel@wamc.org. We would love to hear from you. Let us... Well, let's see. Where do we begin? Let's talk about Donald Trump on our acting attorney general. Trump says that he wouldn't stop the acting attorney general from curtailing the Mueller inquiry. President Trump said he would not overrule his acting attorney general, Matthew Whitaker, if he decided to curtail the special counsel investigation being led by Robert Mueller of Russian interference in the 2016 presidential campaign. Look. It's going to be up to him. I wouldn't get involved, Trump said in an interview on Fox News Sunday. The president also publicly mocked a House Democrat who criticized Whitaker, deriding Representative Adam Schiff, calling him a little Adam
S-H-I.
Yes.
S-C-H-I-T-T.
Back to the manure spreader we go.
And there you go, Judy. Thank you. So in the week since Trump forced Jeff Sessions to resign as attorney general and chose Whitaker to serve as his interim replacement, Whitaker has faced calls from Democrats to recuse himself from the oversight of the investigation, given his previous criticism of the inquiry. Trump said in Sunday's interview that, quote, did not know Whitaker took views on the Mueller investigation as such before he appointed them. Trump essentially shut the door to sitting down with Mueller, telling host Chris Wallace that his written answers mean probably this is the end of his involvement in the inquiry. He said, quote, I think we've wasted enough time on this witch hunt, and the answer is probably we're finished, Trump said. He said that he had been given very complete answers to a lot of questions, and that, quote, should solve the problem.
Well, as the aforementioned Chartok twins used to say to each other, all the time. I hate to say I told you so, but I told you so. Yes, I told you so.
You must have driven your mother crazy.
Yeah, I told you so. She said that too. But the fact of the matter is, here's Mitch McConnell standing up there and saying, Trump will do nothing to stop this. Mueller investigation.
And so there's no reason that we need to pass legislation to protect Mueller because he's not going to do anything to Mueller.
And now it's happening before our very eyes. So the other issue, of course, is liar, liar, pants on fire. But that we already know about Trump. So this is proof positive that they're going to go for what I've always said they were going to go for. They're going to contain Mueller.
I mean, how do prosecutors feel about having someone just supply written answers helped with their attorneys? I mean, is that a valuable back and forth?
David?
It isn't if you're conducting an investigation, you're looking for information because you really need the information. It isn't helpful to not have that person physically in front of you where you're asking questions so that you're not only do you have the time to follow up with your questions, but you're also looking at the person's demeanor and assessing the individual and determining how that person would look, you know, on the stand, so on and so forth. But in this case, I have to believe that the only reason why they're accepting anything in writing is because they don't really need it. They have all of the information from a whole host. I mean, every single person on the president's inner circle who has been indicted or investigated is cooperating. There is a chorus of people that are singing and cooperating with the special prosecutor's investigation. So I'm of the opinion that that they didn't really need him to shed any more light on what was happening here.
You know, one of my favorite parts of this is this allegation that Rudy Giuliani keeps raising, which is that this is a perjury trap. You know, I'll tell you when it's a perjury trap, when you perjure yourself.
All the time.
That's when it's a perjury trap.
Yeah, if you didn't lie, you wouldn't have to worry about the perjury, right?
Right, and they're caught between a rock and a hard place here between Don Sr. and Don Jr.
If your wife asks you, you know, where did you go after work, you could assume that that's a perjury trap if you are accustomed to lying, right?
Right. But if you really did just go to the grocery store and buy Vlasic pickles, then no.
It's the same thing with their twist on words, and it's amazing because, you know, not only is the perjury trap something that's been introduced into the lexicon by this administration, but presidential harassment is a new one as well that they're floating out there, right?
A couple of other things. One thing is that it now appears that this meeting, the famous meeting, is where the meat of this whole thing is.
The Trump Tower meeting?
Yeah, the Trump Tower meeting. Thank you for that, Judy. The Trump Tower meeting, which is where Don Jr. said something happened that didn't happen, and then the president wrote, apparently, the memo on the plane,
yes,
which sort of explained this. This puts both of these guys up against each other because these are alternate facts.
Well, what's interesting here as well, and I think that it took the president all of about 24 hours to recognize the significance of the House now being under Democratic control. All of those hearings, the supposed hearings that were being held, where these people were brought in to testify, where they out and out lied, asserted privileges that they were not entitled to, that, you know, the majority leader at the time didn't bother to follow up or enforce. That's all changing now, with Mr. Schiff now heading that particular body, the opportunity to recall, to restart those hearings and to conduct further investigations is all here. And they could be subpoenaed. So it presents a whole host of interesting issues for the president, which I think that reality is starting to sink in for him.
Yeah.
When you think about where this all goes, though, that the president earlier, I think it was on Friday, said that he was the one responding to the questions. No one else was writing the answers. He was writing the answers. And this perjury trap that you were talking about was that, you know, he said, well, you know, if you put down that it was Tuesday and it was really Wednesday, and if they said it was in the morning, it was really in the afternoon, and the walls were yellow and really it was red. And I thought, if you're Mueller, aren't you just high-fiving each other in the office?
Oh my goodness!
Point?
You know, I just wish, I just wish that every single criminal on planet Earth was like our president, who just continues to tell on himself, even when I don't think he intends to tell on himself. Because you can ask him a question, and he just responds, but then he goes right back to his talking points, and sometimes the talking points that he goes back to are talking points that really, it's a disservice to him and his defense. His defense attorneys have to just be beside themselves. This man has absolutely zero discipline. Mm-hmm. While you are in the midst of an investigation, not only do you provide material information for the prosecutors with these sit-down events that you do with, in this instance, it was Chris Wallace.
Right.
You provide material information that these prosecutors are sitting around taping, recording, and by the way, they're just writing everything down. The transcripts of his public interviews, of his tweets. This is a man who doesn't need any prosecutor to put him down because he's putting himself down every time he opens his mouth.
So, I'm sorry, just a quick thing. So, are you telling me, or telling us, that so there's what he writes down, the answers to those questions that he submits, and then there's all the stuff that he says on Fox and Friends and talking to his buddy Steve Doocy and all that stuff. Does that have as much weight as what is written down in the formal?
Now, granted, the words that he's using in the context of an interview, that's not, you know, it's unsworn, but it does all play to this person's state of mind, right? Mm. Because the issue here is, what was in this man's state of mind when he fired Comey?
When Adam Schiff says to him, and it is on the record, and it is potentially difficult, it says to him, did this happen that you said on television 5 nights ago? That's now potential for perjury, right?
Were you lying then, or are you lying now? And the issues that he identifies are issues that are so immaterial. For example, when he talks about, you know, well, the prosecutor's going to ask you whether it was sunny that day or what color the, you know, those are immaterial issues, right? It's the material issues. Like, for example, did you have a conversation with your son shortly after your son met with, you know, representatives from the Russian
government? On the telephone.
On the telephone. Yeah. You know, did you speak with him?
Yeah.
Okay, those are the material issues that are pertinent to the investigation.
And one last thing, if I may, because I know we got to go over break, and that is he hasn't sent, I don't believe he sent those answers in yet. They're obviously worried about even there the potential for perjury. So he hasn't even sent them in. I'm going to send them in. But he was always going to talk to the special prosecutor.
If you're defending this man, if you're looking at this case, you're defending this man, you have so many different avenues that you're trying to protect, you know, this president from, that I would imagine that you have to continue to increase the number of bodies in that war room, you know, beyond Giuliani and his idiocy. To just be able to keep, you know, to keep this thing, the inevitable report from coming out, and then whatever the consequences that flow from that. Because every time he speaks, he opens up a new avenue of attack. And so you're dealing with the congressional investigations. You're dealing with this, you know, special prosecutor investigations. You have no idea what's coming from his former attorney, who Mr. Cohen, who was cooperating. When you see Manafort, Cohen, you have no idea what's yet to come, because we don't know what they're saying.
And Whitaker is a big issue, right? I mean, we don't know. We don't know what the deal is.
And this idea that he can get Whitaker to protect him from all of this is just crazy.
I just want to predict that by the end of the week, his written answers will be released, and we'll be reading them in the New York Times or the Washington Post. Just saying.
But you mean by who?
Leaked by somebody. Anonymous source, probably.
Well,
I don't know.
Then, Judy, the question is, will they leak the final report? Because I think a lot of people worried that we'll never see it.
I think the written responses are in the president's favor, so it will be leaked.
By the president.
By something like that.
Yes. Mm.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your thoughts. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation right after this short break. Italian pianist Federico Colli, and he is winner of the 2011 Salzburg Mozart competition. Wow. He has a sold out debut at Lincoln Center later this month, but before all of that, he'll be performing at the Clark in Williamstown on Friday, the 30th of November.
That's something. A great museum, by the way. Great museum with wonderful music.
Beautiful music. Yeah. There you go. So
does he grind, though?
You can find out more information by going to clarkart.edu, clarkart.edu. And Sarah will be talking to Federico Colli after the panel. So there you go.
I'm going to be very interested in that.
Thank you. Take notes. Yeah. Take notes.
Sarah does so many amazing interviews.
She does.
How does she get those? How does she get those gigs?
Joe tells her this.
She said I'd like to do this, and then she does it.
You just like the best case. Okay.
In the power of the radio station, I think people want to come on the station because it has such a broad reach. Is that true of you, Judy? I'm here to serve.
I like it.
From manure, converted manure to WAMC.
Did you have to borrow that or you own that?
Oh, we own it.
Yeah, we own it, sure.
Did you say 1953 or something?
No, the tractor is like a 59 tractor. We just use it to pull wood out of the
59,
woods.
Massey Ferguson. I had a Massey Ferguson. Hmm. It was a little one. But it was Massey Ferguson, and it was a tractor, and it was great. I used to get on. I used to hit the same rock.
It was a Supreme Court case, wasn't it, Massey Ferguson?
I used to hit
before the other one.
I'm watching your face, and I'm saying to myself, I think he much preferred the passing of the stone to
listening to the same rock every time. And you know, it had that thing in the bottom, so we used to have to hire the neighbor to come over and fix it, and it was $50-$60. So don't you see?
Did you have this Massey Ferguson when you lived down in the city?
No, in Alford.
Oh,
Alford. Alan has letters. We'll go to those. Mm,
okay.
Or you can keep talking about the tractor, whatever you wish.
Yeah. Okay. You want to pass that one over too? Yeah. Okay. That's probably very important, so I'll read it first. Okay. This came from Dale, who said, "Hello, panel. Love the show."
Love you too, Dale.
Can the president just refuse to answer the questions from the special prosecutor? Over to you, David.
Oh, he absolutely could. I mean, he could refuse to answer those questions, which would then, you know, trigger the special prosecutor either, you know, subpoenaing him into a grand jury, and that would trigger all sorts of constitutional issues. But I think under advice of counsel, he is providing, you know, a written response. He's picking and choosing what he's going to respond to. But again, as I said earlier, I don't think the special prosecutor really needed those answers, as this investigation has been one that I think has been very thorough.
But David, do you think for a single second that if they did ask for a subpoena, that this new attorney general would approve them using a subpoena power on the president of the United States?
Oh, I doubt the new acting attorney general would approve anything that would move the investigation forward. I mean, I'm very suspicious about his motives, and I'm very suspicious as to why he would have any kind of supervision or involvement with this case, a case that he's already weighed in on, seen any evidence, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah. Hey, the House Democrats start to really investigate this thing come January. Do they have the right to subpoena the president?
I think it's a constitutional crisis issue.
I think that would be a constitutional crisis with one house forcing, you know, another equal branch of government. Of course, the new acting AG would say that the president, the executive body of our government, has more power than the other two, given his opinions on Supreme Court
cases.
But
that's really not how it works, right?
And I want to bring you back to Kavanaugh, who also had an opinion on this, a pre-opinion about the president not being, as I remember it, and my memory is not great, as we all know, but that would be a no-no.
Yeah, it's executive power. I think that anyone who's looking to either become a judge or to be appointed to any position in our federal government under the Trump administration, one would have to say publicly in some kind of medium that the authority of the executive trumps everything.
Although it was very interesting to see this Trump-appointed federal judge on the Acosta case ruling against the president.
And then we all begin to learn that once you are appointed and you've taken your oath and you're there forever, you tend to abide by the law.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think that the problem here is that a guy like Kavanaugh and some of these other guys were poisoned in those hearings are going to be looking for a place what's the right word without getting into radio trouble? To overrule the president on something to say, you know.
But, you know, the judge didn't necessarily rule against the White House on the Acosta case, because last night, actually, CNN is reporting that the White House has informed Jim Acosta that once this temporary restraining order, you know, rule runs out, he's going to be banned again.
Yes, but as I understand it, Judy, and as I understand it, is that what the judge is doing is using this temporary restraining order in order to figure out whether it ought to be made permanent.
Yeah, it's 14 days that he was given the reprieve from. Now CNN is asking the U.S. District Court for another emergency hearing, saying in a statement the White House is continuing to violate the First and Fifth Amendment rights amendments of the Constitution. These actions threaten all journalists and news organizations. Jim Acosta and CNN will continue to report the news about the White House and the president. Judge Timothy Kelly ruled on Fifth Amendment grounds, saying Acosta's right to due process had been violated. He did not rule on CNN's argument about First Amendment violations.
That's the issue, is the due process issue. And of course, as we've seen, this administration will take these rulings. They will lose. They'll take these rulings, and then they will tailor their next move in a way that is less offensive to whatever the decisions are. And then they'll try it again until they get it right.
So they'll give them some due process, in other words?
So they'll give them some due process, of course, which CNN will now challenge again. And then the second time around, they'll go back up again on the First Amendment and Fifth Amendment issues. And then the judge will now have to address the First Amendment issue.
So immediately after this, both Sarah Sanders and the Deputy Chief of Staff for Communications, Bill Shine, sent this letter, which outlined a preliminary decision and said that they would suspend the press pass again once the restraining order expires. My question being, this is their opportunity, if they wanted to let this just go.
Well, but remember...
Or distract, or continue to use this to distract.
Right. Remember, the president called on Acosta.
Yes.
Knowing full well what he was going to get. So then he took offense at what Acosta, who he knew was going to give him a hard time, said. Amazing.
I think this is all, if you think about it, if he's engaging right now in a full war with the media and he's going to be using these opportunities to discredit the media, it must be because something big is coming and whatever, you know, is going to be reported, of course, will already have been discredited by this administration.
But my favorite of that interview that he did this weekend with the Fox people was that he said he would not be trying to have a third term. Where in the hell did that come from?
I think the White House is going to try to establish due process by establishing some new rules for the press advisories. And one of the rules is going to be don't ask the president any questions that are any hardball questions.
He might find offensive.
Only softball questions. And if you violate that, then you're out of there. They've got their due process rules in place, and a lot of the reporters are going to be out of the room.
Well, what's going to be interesting is to see what the other networks do. Because if you silence CNN, if you stifle that access for CNN, I would imagine that every single reporter would just say, okay, well, we're not going. There'd have to be some unity here.
I would hope so, but you know, they all want their story. Some of them will, I agree, but there are always opportunists out there.
Well, and there are opportunists, but there's also, you know, we'll work for food. You know, you don't want to get canned either.
Canned food.
Well, you don't want to get canned, so if you're saying that what Acosta did was so offensive by asking questions and asking follow-up questions, and the White House is going to establish a brand new standard for what can be asked, what's the point of you showing up and asking questions that are all softball questions? You'd become Fox.
I don't disagree with you. All I'm saying is that I agree with Judy that, okay.
I disagree with him. I think they'll come, as you said before, Joe, they'll work for food.
Yeah, I think it's just easier said than done for everybody to weave. Yeah. I mean, I think like principles are great, but you also have to get your story and do what you have to
principle.
I guess what I'm asking is what good is a story if the stories that are going... Look, you're obviously identifying this one report.
Oh, you're getting cerebral.
Yeah,
you're
I was okay, going to say, ahead. What are you, some kind of intellectual?
And what you want to do is curb.
I get it.
And curb and mold, you know, the kind of questions that you want.
You should be teaching
political
science.
And so if you are a reporter and you still have access to the president and you begin to moderate your behavior, right, what is the point of the story that you ultimately write when it's going to be a story that, it's gone through, you know, it's approved by the White House.
Well, you're right, of course. You're intellectually right. And as Joe said, you've gone cerebral now. But in fact, that ain't the way it is. There was this kid in my class, Vinny, years ago. I used to say to him, he used to stand
Vinny.
Up. Vinny. whoever was there, he said, well, is that the way it is?
And the bottom line is there's nothing really newsworthy that comes out of press briefings anyway, or press conferences.
Well, it depends on how...
I don't know, Judy. You said some goofy stuff.
Right. It's for entertainment value, but not for informing the public
value. Right. No, you're right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have a lot more letters. We'll get to those right after the short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We're having fun. Hopefully you are, too. Alan Chartok is here. Judy Patrick, David Soares. I'm Joe Donahue. We welcome your letters. Alan has a few to read to us.
Okay. I'm going to read it just as it's written.
Uh-oh.
From Trump. What happens if Mueller finds Trump committed impeachable acts, but the trumpet, parenthesis, formerly known as Republican, controlled Senate, won't convict? Since Trump is such a danger to the U.S. and the world, he can't remain in office. First president removed by non-constitutional means, Jim, I doubt that. I doubt it.
My greatest fear for the Democratic controlled House is that they actually take the bait and spend the next several years going hard at this president instead of working on domestic related bills that put people to work. That's my greatest fear.
So the first thing out of the barrel they say is we're going to investigate his income taxes. Now, I certainly think that should be investigated, but is that a winning issue for anybody?
Well, it is in terms of 2020.
I think you're feeding, we'll call it blue meat, right? Mm-hmm. You're doing that and you're feeding, blue meat. But let me just say this.
By the way, my dog loves blue meat. Oh, can't get enough of that stuff.
What is it?
I mean, that's great. It's great for Democrats and progressives to, to say and then want to watch, the dismantling of this administration. But at the end of the day, in order for Democrats won the House in districts that were previously red.
Yep.
And it's because of the
Orange
message
County.
That they delivered on the ground. And that message is, look, we want jobs. We want industry back in our country. We want people to be secure in their homes and in their finances. That's what won. Right. It wasn't, we're going to go in there and impeach, Donald Trump. So I would think that your priorities right now, if you're Nancy Pelosi and you're in that house, is to force McConnell to say no to an infrastructure bill.
Yeah.
Start out with an infrastructure bill. Force the Republicans to say no.
But
you have to be in there doing the work of the people. And you can investigate, but you have to do the work of the people.
Far be it from me to contradict anything the district attorney says, because, you might get arrested. I don't know. There isn't a business we're hiring now out in front of their business. Now, you can say, well, it's the quality of the job that counts or the pay that comes with the job that counts. But I think this hatred of this guy has to extend beyond what you just said, which is that we want jobs. There are plenty of jobs right now. They're not good jobs necessarily, but there are plenty of jobs. And I don't know that that's something that is playing here.
People are elected to Congress to govern. I think investigating is part of the responsibility as well, but I think their chief mission should be to govern. And it shouldn't be about trying to win the 2020 election. It should be for the next 2 years about governing. And so to focus entirely on investigating, I think, is going to come back to haunt the Democrats for the valid reason of they're not governing.
Well, I think they are governing. I think the Constitution lays out all these branches of government that are supposed to be looking at each other. That's government, isn't it, Judy?
It is, but I'm not saying not to investigate. I'm just saying not to put it at the forefront of your legislative agenda.
Democrats have the opportunity right now to steal, the Make America Great Again moniker.
Could be.
They have it right now.
Could, but let me
and
ask
that's
you this.
By moving aggressively on health care, And that's by moving aggressively on an infrastructure bill and forcing the Republicans, who, of course, just gave the greatest, you know, tax cut for the top 20% of our country.
So tell me this.
Yes.
Then why? I mean, I'm so fascinated by the fact that Orange County turns Democratic. Orange County turns
in
Democratic.
In California.
Right? Yeah. That's incredible to me that that happened. And I think it's based on a lot of it is based on this Trumpian personality, which so many people think is just so dangerous.
Yes, and but Orange County isn't the county that impressed me the most. I mean, I think
Wisconsin.
I think Wisconsin. Sure. You know, I think going Michigan, Wisconsin, you know, Pennsylvania. Those
That's
are
where
the
he
states.
Won. Yeah.
Yeah, even Ohio.
You know, those are the states that I think were most impressive. And when I speak about infrastructure bills, I'm thinking about not the coastal, you know, cities and states. I'm really thinking about the heartland of our country, putting people back to work. And giving people a sense of you know, security. If the Democrats fail to do this and get distracted by pursuing all the shiny objects, you know, 2 years will go by very quickly. And what you're going to do is I think you're going to embolden this president, and you may even help in solidifying his base.
Well, see, I think the guy's a madman. I do. And I could be it could be worse than that. I could say use other terms, but I think he's a madman, and I think that's what people were reacting to. They don't like, and Judy said governing before, they don't like their governor, small g, being crazy.
You got a lot of letters there.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Judy. Does that mean go ahead, Allison? Allison said opportunistic.
Prime the pump. She's an editor, Allison, or the manure spreader in this case.
Allison says. Opportunistic press. Reporters sticking together and refusing to cover the White House because of Acosta? Whee. Do you really see them raising their hands, panting like fifth graders, to get called on when Trump was telling the reporters she was asking a very stupid question? Not one of them said, it's a good question. And that's Allison in Carmel. Okay.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's a good point because the usually... It comes after the fact when the press stands up and starts defending their own, of saying, this is my colleague, they asked a great question, it was good. But it doesn't happen in the moment. It doesn't happen as it's being asked.
So anyway, then Doreen said, please discuss Allen's interview with Governor Cuomo on Friday. I would like to hear the panel's thoughts on what Cuomo said in his interview with Allen on Friday. Amazon is promising 25,000 jobs, but often jobs promised for tax breaks never materialize. How many of these jobs will go to local people? Too many unanswered questions for anywhere like the $1 to $3 billion, and I'm going to add to that $4 billion in tax breaks. Panel.
I thought your questions were brilliant. I thought you were fantastic, Alan.
And, did you stay in for the whole thing, or did you?
Oh no, we were, you know,
you were escorted out.
Yes, we were escorted out.
All right, got it.
Well, you know, I mean, I asked those questions, but the truth of the matter is, he had an answer for everything, including when the Moreland Act, why the Moreland Act Commission was disbanded. Now, I really, and you were on the Moreland Commission, right, David?
Yes,
yeah.
I was.
And they were getting close. You were getting close. I don't know how much of this you're allowed to share, but you were getting close, right, to the meat of things in corruption.
Sniffing around.
And then all of a sudden, well, more than sniffing, sort of scenting, so identifying. So then he said, no, we have to, it's my commission, I can do what I want. And he disbanded. Judy's making a face.
I don't think it was a very good imitation. That's
oh,
all.
Okay.
I have to disagree with you. I like, and it was instant. You know,
I want you to do it the next time the governor comes on.
Yeah. So okay. Do you want to?
No, I just want to get back to the Amazon issues because it is a very polarizing. issue, and there's been some, I think, legitimate criticism for why they didn't locate someplace in the heartland of the country, someplace
because they wanted to be in New York City, the heart of the country, and across the river from Washington, the other heart.
You know, people in Kansas City buy from Amazon as well, and so that was my. But you know, over the years, I've grown accustomed to this issue of tax or property tax relief for new businesses, although I do think Amazon played this game of pitting one state against another very well. Bottom line is, you know, a 10%, they're still going to be paying some property taxes, right? And there's still going to be some economic incentive. I understand that that part of New York State maybe needs the infusion of jobs less than Utica or Schenectady or Tonawanda, but I think I would have loved to seen a location someplace in the Midwest.
Yeah, well, but you're not him.
You know,
the globalist imperialist in me, you know, is telling me that the reason why they're in New York City is not because of what the future holds for them in the state of New York or even along the Eastern Seaboard. It's looking over across the pond to Europe, and you have to be strategically located in Manhattan, in New York City, just like our banks. Yeah, just like our big high financing banks. But you have to have a president in that city. So I don't think that Amazon moving to New York State, New York City, is about jobs for New Yorkers. I think it's about looking forward across the pond.
So if they hadn't given for anywhere from $1 to $4 billion, we've heard all of those prices, to make this happen, would they have come anyway because they understood the strategic value of Washington and New York City?
Well, I think it's a lot harder to justify coming into a state with the kind of retail and the monies associated with having a presence in a major city without the kind of tax breaks. I think they were going to come and have some kind of physical presence here anyway, but it surely sweetened the pot.
I want to go back to your Moreland Act Commission, if I may, Judy.
Go ahead.
Only if you do the impersonation.
Oh, we have to take a break.
So. Okay.
And then will you remember?
Yeah.
Okay. Just jot it down. And we'll get right to it. We'll be back. First news with Ray Grab. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning.
Very sobering.
David Soares is here. Judy Patrick joins us. Alan Chartok has the letters, and we're going to go back to those, and then we'll move on to some other stuff.
Okay. I just wanted to finish that one thought that I had, which was that the Moreland Act Commission, that the doing away with the Moreland Act Commission was really one of the worst things that was done during the Cuomo administration, this Cuomo, and he has no problem with saying that he used it as a tactic in order to get what he wanted out of Shelley Silver, you know, where he's going right now, and Dean Skelos. So that's all. Somebody wanted me to talk about the interview. I thought that was interesting.
It is.
Didn't you? And Ron's, oh, no, I'm so sorry. Aishu said, rather than boycotting the White House press corps, if the White House makes new rules, the better way to protest might be to continue to ask hard questions and for the reporters to get kicked out one by one.
That's true.
You know, it sort of reminds me of that old thing about some guys are suspected in the concentration camp and everybody steps forward and said, I'm him. You know, that kind of thing.
I like that. Yeah. I mean, I like the idea.
Yeah. And it would make good TV.
Yeah. Good clarification.
And Jeannie says, investigations needed. The House can chew gum and walk at the same time. They can work on policy and investigate a criminal president. Congress has a constitutional duty to investigate. This is not just about politics, says Jeannie. Sydney says, Dems in the House. Dems have already said that they plan to work on legislation for people while they look into Donald J. Trump. Why are you having this conversation about what the Dems might do wrong? Hey, we talk about everything here, don't we?
Yeah, and my concern is that the investigation element will overshadow the policy.
And that's what you don't want. I mean, it's true. You can do both at the same time. You want to lead, however, with making sure that people are feeling secure about their lives.
And one way to do that is to lock them up. John says, Saudis. Good morning, Roundtable. Could you please discuss Trump's dismissal of CIA findings on the Saudi involvement in the Khashoggi murder? Can Congress do anything even if Trump doesn't apologize? If this has been discussed earlier?
It was not. So go ahead.
Interesting news today that the president doesn't want to listen to what he calls the suffering tape. Now, my understanding is they're probably not speaking English, so he's probably not going to get a good idea of what they what they said, but he will hear the suffering. I think if you're the president, you got to, you know, step up and listen, get as much information as possible. And apparently the CIA has told them that they're pretty sure that the responsibility goes all the way to the top, but he just doesn't want to hear it.
It's as if David Soares, the DA, would say, you know, I find it unpleasant, so I'm not going to listen to the evidence.
This is another Charlie Brown and Lucy moment here, where once again there are expectations that this particular president is going to, in fact, do what is his job and what's expected of him. I think what's interesting here is that this one issue provides both the Senate and the House, provides both Republicans and Democrats an opportunity to stand unified on this very principled issue. And so it'll be interesting to see what Congress is going to do in terms of the relationship and what kind of policy and legislation that's going to pass as a reaction, and what Congress is going to do to hold the Saudi Arabian government accountable.
Okay, so Ronnie writes and says, the madman. That's a quote I used. Trump is not a madman. Everything he does is to enrich himself. He's an adult, spoiled brat who needs a serious timeout and his toys confiscated. Do you think, my answer to that is, do you think a guy who is the president of the United States has to be a little mad not to be concerned with the general welfare of the country as opposed to his own needs?
I mean, he's always been out front about what he is. I mean, he doesn't hide it, whether or not that's an odd question. This debate about trying to psychoanalyze him from afar.
Well, that's a big issue, by the way, right now. It's a big issue whether or not it's permissible under the Goldwater rule for trained psychologists and psychiatrists to offer opinions about the mental health of a man who has not been analyzed or seen by them.
I don't think this. I mean, I agree with you, Judy. I don't think this man has ever hidden who he is. In fact, is he's never done that. He's told you what he wants. You know what he wants. He's not disclosed his taxes. He doesn't discuss his finances. He lies every time he opens his mouth. And so, you know, if we're going to be psychoanalyzing him, I think we're wasting our time, because the conclusions are going to be he is who he has told us he is.
Okay, so
I think the psychoanalysis has to be done on the people who saw that, understood that, and still went and voted for him.
Okay, so
or within the Republican Senate that still supports him.
That continues to enable the behavior.
Correct, yes.
Okay, so let's go away from Trump for a minute, and let's go to Hitler. So would it have been appropriate?
That's a local ride.
No, would it be appropriate for people to have analyzed Hitler as a madman at that time? Forget about Trump. You know, this business about he always told us what he was. He wrote Mein Kampf. We knew what was in it. I don't think either of you are accurate. I don't wish to push, you know, you around, but I don't think either of you are accurate here, because he says he's the best president that the United States has ever had. He says that he's superb. He says he's thinking about the people and talks about the stock market and the rest of it. No, I don't think he's always told us, you know, he's only involved in personal enrichment.
I think when you compare him to Hitler, you're just encouraging the country to remain divided. I think Hitler comparisons may play to the liberal base, but I don't think it's constructive in terms of discussing the president and how we're going to proceed for the next 2 years.
Okay, that's fair, I think, except it's not right. I didn't say in this particular time that Trump and Hitler were comparable. I said, let's go away. Remember that, Judy? Let's go away.
You're mincing words.
No, I'm not. Let's go away from Trump and go to Hitler. Would it have been appropriate to psychoanalyze Hitler at the time?
So,
and by the way, Freud was there at the time.
Let me just, the Goldwater rule, somebody asked about this last week, and I meant to look it up, and I didn't. A Goldwater rule is the informal name given to Section 7 of the American Psychiatric Association's Principles of Media Ethics. So there was a magazine, believe it or not, called Fact Magazine, and they put a piece in there that said, Fact, 1,189 psychiatrists say Goldwater is psychologically unfit to be president. So this, having widely believed that that was a reason for Goldwater to lose a large swath of votes as a result of that, the APA, the American Psychiatric Association, ruled that this was unethical. And it says that it's unethical for psychiatrists to give a professional opinion about public figures whom they have not examined in person and for whom they have not obtained consent to discuss their mental health in public statements, named after Barry Goldwater.
That's pretty much what I said, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
I mean, why are you laughing?
No, I think when we go back and we take inventory in our history and we look at and we discuss, you know, people like Hitler, I think what's important is to focus on the conditions that gave rise to this man's popularity. And what we have to talk about is the fact that, when the economy is pushing upon people and people are having to make decisions about, and people are feeling insecure and they have to make decisions for themselves, and they hear someone who, you know, is blaming others, the current state. I think we should all take pause. A responsible leader, right, a responsible president of the United States would never use, you know, the kind of rhetoric that this person uses and wouldn't be dividing the country the way that this person is, you know, dividing the country. You know, what's amazing here is even we just experienced the midterms, and I'm still proud of the fact that we have, you know, a means by which we transfer authority and power here when it's done peacefully.
You bet.
I do think that if we continue to move in this current trajectory, you're going to see fights at the poll. You're going to see, you know, us become more tribal and begin more warring factions. I'm happy that to have read in today's papers about the fact that you have candidates like Stacey Adams, Mr. Gilliam, who continuing to
if
move.
She's a right, and you have to get her right.
Continuing to move forward with the campaign, even though it's over, but continuing to move forward with this message about the importance of elections and getting more people interested in the process of voting.
And what's more, David, you're exactly right. The idea that all is not right with the electoral process. In other words, we had people changing the rules, trying to suppress the voters from coming out, and that's what she's warning about. And I think that's terrific.
And and despite losing, to continue moving forward, to energize people and get people to use the most precious franchise that we have in this country, I think is important.
Okay. And so Lee says, if Jeff Sessions introduced the concept of Christian Sharia law back in August, now Trump has appointed an acting attorney general whose statements seem to indicate that he is perfectly prepared to take us there. And that's from Lee in Modena. All right. And then we heard from Jude, who said, yet another twist on words. Trump bungled the name of Paradise, the knit town that tragically burned to the ground. Instead, he referred to it as pleasure. And then we heard from Bob, who says, it's no surprise that Trump continues to ignore concrete evidence of the Crown Prince's involvement in Khashoggi's murder. His standard for assessing guilt for those he perceives as allies is an admission of guilt. Nothing less is ever enough. That's also the standard he expects America to judge him by. Good luck with that. And that's Bob from Albany. And Gene says, greetings, panel. Please help me understand what actual repercussions might happen if and when Mueller gets the axe. I know from the beginning there's been a drumbeat of he'd better not dare to fire Mueller or else. From what I've seen, there is insufficient testosterone in all of Congress to act in response. What actually could happen? I suspect and fear that our very own Teflon Don may careen merrily on his way unhindered.
I don't think that will happen,
there's always
that possibility. I mean, what is interesting is this expectation that the president of the United States is going to say anything holding, you know, a murderous Saudi prince accountable when he himself is under investigation. His newly appointed, freshly minted acting, you know, attorney general is also under investigation by the very body that is conducting he oversees the very agency he's being investigated by. This is so confusing. I mean, but I wouldn't expect this president to be holding the Saudi prince accountable, because he is accountable to no one.
Roger says, Whitaker, many consider Trump's appointment of Mr. Whitaker as unconstitutional in that he has not had Senate approval of advice or consent as a top-tier appointment, which would not have been the case if he appointed the assistant attorney general to temporarily assume the top spot. What if several mid- and upper-level Department of Justice refused to follow his directives as being illegitimate? Just what can Congress do on this blatant threat to constitutional law? Obviously, this will intensify if Whitaker makes any judgment on the Mueller investigation. He already has. We've just heard it.
Yeah, he already has. But I also think that right now, and I anticipate seeing more, there's going to be a whole host of different parties that are going to be filing lawsuits, really testing the constitutionality of this man's appointment.
Right. So interesting.
You're just going to see that.
Apparently, he can be in office for 211 days, and it's based on a case that dates back to the 1890s. So this is something that we need to address.
Not sure, but someone has called this a Saturday Night Massacre in slow motion. And I was just thinking about that. The Saturday Night Massacre produced some heroes, some people who refused to carry out Dick Nixon's rules and what he wanted to do. They resigned rather than do that, right?
Yeah. And I think there was a resignation. Wasn't there a resignation last week of a top official in the administration? It'll come to me. But, you know, I know there's a lot of folks who are concerned about the future of this investigation, given this most recent appointment. And I continue to stand by. It's you're too far down the track for this train to go to be pushing this train back in the station. I mean, with the leaks and access to the media and the fact that you do have what I think is a special prosecutor that's thought that through.
But David, don't you think that when a rat is in the corner, he'll bite? I mean, my feeling is that Trump, and I've said it from the very beginning, we're all here to attest to my having predicted this, which is...
I attest.
I so attest. Okay, so, good morning, panel. If Mueller comes out with charges against all Trump's henchmen and himself today and tomorrow, Trump pardoned everyone. What happens next? Also, can Trump pardon his family and himself for emoluments of violations? Can a constitutionally approved rule be considered a pardonable law?
I think he can pardon anybody.
You can do that, but of course, there is the impeachment process. That's why it's in the Constitution. But I doubt that's going to happen. Joe?
90 seconds. This was going to be the top story today, and we have never gotten to it. So let's just 90 seconds on Nancy Pelosi. Does she have the votes?
She's got the votes.
Yeah, she's got the votes.
She has the votes, and she should have the votes. You want, right now, you want a brilliant tactician in that position leading the charge for the House. Mm-hmm. And to put someone there who has no experience, to me, would be just so detrimental for the Democrats.
So but they are calling the New York Times refers to it today as a simmering rebellion, and the interest in staging a coup.
Well, it's a great thing to want to lead, but there's also the thing about knowing how to lead, and I think that's the trick bag that the Democrats find themselves.
Here's the other problem in my reading of the situation: nobody has come forward to actually say I'll do it.
Hey, and the Republicans did a great job of masterminding this whole discussion.
That's right, Judy.
They made it an issue, and actually the media fostered it by keep asking people running for office who they were going to support for speaker.
Exactly.
Nobody
right.
asked about the leader of the Senate.
You're exactly right.
Just saying.
That is very true. Okay, we are out of time. My thanks to everybody. What?
Darn.
Well, we'll come back and do it tomorrow. David Soares, thank you very much. Judy, always a pleasure. Alan, thank you. We'll be back right after the short break.
Gobble, gobble.